This is on, man. Riding a skateboard, Billy Cleaver, angry sixth grader, came ripping off the playground with an old school aerial, came down into a backside 360 with a tail grab, then heel flipped onto the sidewalk. He did it flawlessly, which was good because he was feeling he'd lost some of his cool today. The four kids following behind were quiet instead of yelling like usual. And this was the big downhill run to Market Street in San Diego. But they were quiet, like they had lost confidence in him. Billy Cleaver had been humiliated today. His hand hurt like a mother. He told the stupid nurse just to put a Band-Aid on it, but she insisted on a big white thing. He ripped it off the minute school was out, but still, looked like crap. He looked like an invalid. Something sick. Humiliated. At age 11, Billy Cleaver was 5'9 and 120 pounds, solid muscle for a kid his age, and a good foot taller than anybody else in the school. He was bigger than most of the teachers, even. Nobody messed with him. That little skin-shit Jamie, that Nimrod doof with buck teeth, he should have stayed out of Billy's way. Marky Lester, the pester, was throwing him a football, and when he went back to receive it, he tripped over Bucky Beaver and fell, taking Bucky with him. Billy was pissed and embarrassed, sprawling like that in front of everybody, with Sarah Hardy and the others giggling. The kid was still lying on the ground, so Billy gave him a couple of kicks with his Vans. Nothing, really, just a warning. And when the kid got up, he smacked him a little, no biggie. And the next thing he knows, he's got Monkey Boy jumping on his back, yanking his hair and growling in his ear like a fucking ape. And Billy reached back and grabbed for him, and Monkey Boy took a bite like, whoa, pissing pain, seeing stars. Of course, the monitor, Mr. Snotty Nose Drip, does nothing, whining, "Break it up, boys, break it up, boys." They put Monkey Boy in detention and called his mother to come and pick him up. But his mother obviously didn't take him home, which was too bad for him. Because there they were now, walking along at the bottom of the hill, starting to cross the baseball field. Jamie and Monkey Boy. And this is on. Billy hits them side-on, moving fast, and the two go flying like bowling pins right next to the dugout by the side of the field. Jamie skids on his chin on the dirt, raising a cloud of brown dust, and Monkey Boy bangs into the chain-link backstop behind home plate. Off to one side, Billy's buddies are yelling, "Blood! We want blood!" The little kid, Jamie, is moaning in the dust. So Billy goes right for Monkey Boy. He charges him with his deck, trucks out, swinging the skateboard hard, and catches the little black fucker back of the ear, thinking that'll teach him a lesson. Monkey Boy's legs go out. He flops on the ground like a rag doll, and Billy kicks him a good one right under the chin, lifts his ass off the dirt a little, that one does. But Billy doesn't want to get that monkey blood on his Vans, so he comes back swinging the deck again, figuring to whack the monkey square in the face, maybe break his nose and jaw, make him even uglier than he is. But Monkey Boy springs to one side. The deck clangs the fence. Quang, quang, quang. And Monkey Boy sinks his teeth into Billy's wrist and bites fucking hard. Billy screams and drops his deck, and Monkey Boy hangs on. Billy is feeling his hand get numb. There's blood pouring down from the arm, down Monkey Boy's chin, and he's snarling like a dog, and his eyes are popping out, staring at Billy. And it's like his hair is raised or something, and Billy thinks in an instant of pure panic, "Shit, this black fuck's gonna eat me." By then, his skate-neck buddies run up, all swinging their boards at the monkey, four boards whacking him downside the head. While Billy is yelling and the monkey is growling, it takes forever until Monkey Boy drops the hand, springs at Marky Lester, and hits him full in the chest, and the pester goes down, and the others all chase after them as they roll in the dust while Billy nurses his bleeding arm. A few seconds later, when the pain is bearable and Billy looks up, he sees the monkey has scrambled up the chain-link backstop and is maybe 15 feet in the air above them, staring down at them. While his buds all stand below and yell and shake their decks at him, but nothing is happening, Billy staggers to his feet and says, "You look like a bunch of monkeys. We want him to come down." "Well, he won't," Billy said. "He's not stupid. He knows we'll kick the shit out of him if he comes down. Least I will. So how we get him down?" Billy is feeling mean now. Blind mean. He wants to hurt something. So he goes right over to Jamie and starts kicking the kid, trying to hit him in his little nuts. But the kid is rolling and yelling for help. Fucking baby that he is. Some of the buds don't like it. "Hey, leave him alone. Hey, he's a little kid." But Billy is thinking, "Fuck it. I want that monkey down here. And this will do it." Nimrod kid rolling in dust. Kick and kick. Kick. The kid yelling for help. And suddenly the buddies are screaming, "Oh, shit! 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 Shit!" And they're running away. And then something hot and soft smacks Billy on the back of the neck. He gets the weird smell, and he can't believe it. He reaches back and, Jesus, he can't believe it. Shit! He's throwing shit! The monkey boy's up there with his pants down, heaving crap down at them, and never missing. Deadly. The kids are all covered in it. And then another one hits Billy right in the face. His mouth is half open. Urgh, ugh. He spits and spits, wipes his face and spits again, trying to get that taste out of his mouth. Monkey shit. Fuck shit. Billy raises his fist. "You fucking animal!" And gets another one right on the forehead. Splat! He grabs his deck and runs away, joins his buds. They're spitting, too. It's disgusting. It sticks to their clothes, faces. Shit! They all look to Billy. It's on their faces. "Look what you got us into." It's the moment to step up, and Billy knows how. "Guy's an animal," Billy said. "Only one thing to do with animals. My dad's got a gun. I know where it is." "Big talk," Marky says. "You're full of shit," Hurley says. "Yeah? Wait and see. Monkey Boy won't make school tomorrow. Wait and see." Billy trudges home carrying his board, and the others drag on after him. And he's thinking, "Oh, shit. What did I just promise to do?" Stan Milgram had begun the long trip to see his aunt in California, but he had only been driving for an hour before Gerard started to complain. "It stinks," Gerard said, perched in the back seat. "It stinks to high heaven." He looked out the window. "What hellhole is this?"
"It's Columbus, Ohio," Stan said.
"Disgusting," Gerard said.
"You know what they say," Stan said. "Columbus is Cleveland without the glitter."
The bird said nothing.
"You know what glitter is?"
"Yes, shut up and drive."
Gerard sounded cranky, and he shouldn't be, Stan felt, considering how well the parrot had been treated the last couple of days.
Stan had gone online to find out what Grays ate, and had gotten Gerard some delicious apples and special greens. He'd left the TV on in the pet shop at night for Gerard to watch, and after a day, Gerard had stopped nipping at his fingers. He even allowed Stan to put him on his shoulder without biting his ear.
"Are we almost there?" Gerard said.
"No, we've only been gone an hour."
"How much farther is it?"
"We have to drive 3 days, Gerard."
3 days. That is 24 times 3. That is 72 hours. Stan frowned. He had never heard of a bird that did math. Where'd you learn that? I am a man of many talents. You're not a man at all, he laughed. Was that from a movie? Sometimes the bird repeated lines from movies, he was sure of it.
Dave, Gerard said in a monotone, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Oh, wait, I know that one. It's Star Wars. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
It was a woman's voice. Stan frowned. Some airplane movie?
They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere.
I know. That's not a movie. That's poetry. Sink me!
Now he sounded British.
I give up,
Stan said. So do I, Gerard said, with an elaborate sigh. How much farther is it?
3 days, Stan said.
The parrot stared out the window at the passing city.
Well, they're saved from the blessings of civilization, he said in a cowboy drawl, and he began to make the sounds of a plunking banjo.
Later in the day, the parrot began to sing French songs, or maybe they were Arab songs, Stan couldn't be sure. Anyway, some foreign language. It seemed he had gone to a live concert, or at least heard a recording of one, because he mimicked the crowd sounds and the instruments tuning up, and the cheering as the performers came on before he sang the song itself. It sounded like he was singing Dee Dee, or something like that. It was interesting for a while, kind of like hearing radio from a foreign country, but Gerard tended to repeat himself. On a narrow side road, they were stuck behind a woman driver. Stan tried to pass her once or twice, but never could. After a while, Gerard started to say, Le soleil c'est beau, and then make a loud sound like a gunshot.
Is that French? Stan asked.
More gunshots.
Le soleil c'est beau,
bang.
Le soleil c'est beau,
bang.
Le soleil c'est beau,
bang.
Gerard.
The bird said,
Les femmes au volant, c'est la lâcheté personnifiée.
He made a rumbling sound.
Pourquoi elle ne dépasse pas? Oh oui, merde, des travaux.
The lady driver finally turned off to the right, but she was slow making the turn, and Stan had to brake slightly as he went past her.
Il ne faut jamais freiner, comme disait le vieux père Bugatti. Les voitures sont faites pour rouler, pas pour s'arrêter.
Stan sighed. I don't understand a word you are saying, Gerard.
Merde, les flics arrivent.
He began to wail like a police siren.
That's enough, Stan said.
He turned on the radio. By now it was late afternoon. They'd passed Maryville and were heading toward St. Louis. Traffic was picking up.
Are we almost there? Gerard said.
Stan sighed. Never mind. It was going to be a long trip. Lynn sat on the edge of the tub and used the washcloth gently to clean the gash behind his ear.
Dave, Lynn said, tell me what happened.
She could see the cut was deep, but he wasn't complaining.
They came after us, Mom.
Jamie was excited, moving his arms. He was covered in dust and had bruises on his stomach and shoulders, but was otherwise not badly hurt.
We didn't do anything. Sixth graders. Evil dudes.
Jamie, she said, let Dave tell me. How did you get this cut?
Billy swung the board at him, Jamie said. We didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything? She said, raising an eyebrow. You mean this happened for no reason at all?
Yes, Mom. I swear, we were just walking home. They came after us.
Mrs. Lester called.
Lynn said quietly.
Her son came home covered in excrement. No, it was poo.
How did that...
Dave threw it! He was great. They were beating us, and he threw it, and they ran away. He never missed.
Lynn continued to clean the cut gently.
Is that true, Dave?
They hurted Jamie. They beated him and kicked him.
So you threw poo at them?
They hurted Jamie,
he said again, as if it explained everything.
No kidding, Henry said when he came home later. He threw feces. That's classic chimp behavior.
Maybe, but it's a problem,
Lynn said. They say he's disruptive in class. He's getting into scrapes on the playground. He's bitten other children. Now he's thrown feces. She shook her head.
I don't know how to be a parent to a chimpanzee.
Half chimp. Even quarter chimp, Henry. I can't make him understand that he can't behave this way.
But they pick on him, right? Henry said. And these older kids, they were sixth graders. Skateboarders? Those kids are in and out of reform school. And what are sixth graders doing bothering with second graders anyway?
Jamie says the kids made fun of Dave. They call him Monkey Boy.
You think Dave picked this fight?
I don't know. He's aggressive.
This happened at the playground. I bet there's a security camera there.
Henry, she said, you're not understanding what I am telling you.
Yes, I am. You believe Dave started this. And I have the feeling some bullying, dumbass kid...
That was when they heard the gunshot in the backyard. Traffic crawled. The 405 freeway was a river of red lights in the night. Alex Burnett sighed. Sitting beside her, Jamie said,
How much farther is it?
It's going to be a while, Jamie.
I'm tired.
See if you can lie back and rest.
I can't. It's boring.
It's going to be a while, she said again. She flipped open the new cell phone, found the number she had entered for her old childhood friend. She didn't know whom else to call. Lynn was always there for her. When Alex and her husband were breaking up, she and the baby had gone down to see Lynn and Henry. The little kids, both named Jamie, played together. Alex had stayed there a week. But now she was having trouble getting Lynn on the phone. At first she worried she didn't have the right number. Then she thought there was something wrong with her cheap cell phone. But then she got the answering machine, and now...
Hello? Hello, who is this?
Lynn.
It's Alex. Listen, Oh, Alex, I'm really sorry. I can't talk now.
What?
Not now, I'm sorry. Later. But what...
She heard the dial tone. Lynn had already hung up. She stared forward at the red lights of the creeping freeway.
Who's that?
Her son asked.
Aunt Lynn, she said. But she couldn't talk. They just sounded busy.
So are we still going there?
Maybe tomorrow.
She pulled off the freeway at San Clemente and started to look for a motel. For some reason, she was strangely disoriented by the fact that she could not see Lynn. She hadn't realized that she'd been counting on it.
Where are we going, Mom?
Jamie sounded anxious.
We'll stay at a motel.
What motel?
I'm looking. He stared at her.
Do you know where it is?
No, Jamie. I'm looking.
They passed one, a Holiday Inn, but it was too big and it looked exposed. She found a Best Western, unobtrusive, on Camino Real, and pulled in. She told Jamie to stay in the car while she went into the lobby. A pimply, gangly kid stood behind the counter. He was tapping his fingers on the polished granite surface, humming a little to himself. He seemed restless.
Hi, Alex said. Do you have a room for tonight?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like one.
Just for yourself?
No, for me and my son.
He glanced out the door at Jamie.
He under 12?
He was still clicking his fingernails.
Yes, why?
If he goes to the pool, you gotta accompany him.
That's fine.
Still tapping the counter, she gave him a credit card and he swiped it, all the while tapping out a beat with his other hand. It was getting on her nerves.
Can I ask you why you do that?
He began to sing in a monotone. Trouble's where I'm going and trouble's where I've been. He thumped the counter. 'Cause trouble is my middle name and trouble is my sin. He smiled.
It's a song.
That's very unusual, she said.
My dad used to sing it.
I see.
He's dead now.
I see.
Killed himself.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Shotgun.
I'm sorry.
Want to see it? She blinked.
Maybe some other time.
I keep it right here, he said, nodding to the underside of the counter. Not loaded, of course. Tapping, singing. Trouble is the only place I've been.
I'll just sign in, Alex said.
He gave her back her card and she filled out the form, still clicking all the time. She thought about going elsewhere, but she was tired. Jamie was waiting. She had to feed him, buy some new clothes for him, a toothbrush, all that.
There you go, the kid said, giving her the room keys.
It was not until she was back in her car, driving to a parking spot near the room, that she remembered she was not supposed to have used her credit card. Too late now.
Mom, I'm hungry.
I know, honey. We'll get something.
I want a burger.
Okay, we can do that. She drove through the parking lot and back onto the street. Better to get him fed before they went to the room.
There were two more gunshots as Lynn ran into the backyard. Her daughter Tracy was screaming. Dave was up in the tree yelling and shaking the branches. And Jamie lay on the ground with blood pouring from his head. She felt sick. She started forward and Tracy screamed, "Mom, stay down!"
The gunshot seemed to be coming from the street. Whoever it was shooting through their wooden slat fence. There was the sound of distant sirens. She could not take her eyes off Jamie. She started to move toward him. More gunshots and snapping of leaves in the tree. They were shooting at Dave. Dave was whooping and growling, shaking the branches angrily. He yelled, "You dead! You dead, boy!"
"Dave, be quiet!" she shouted.
She started crawling toward Jamie. Tracy was shouting into the cell phone, giving the address to 911. Jamie was moaning on the grass. He was all she saw. She hoped that Henry had gone out the front door and would see who it was and would not get hurt. It was obviously someone trying to get Dave. The sirens were louder. She heard shouts and running footsteps on the street. Some car had pulled up, bright light shining through the slats of the fence, casting streaks of shadow. Overhead, Dave gave a war whoop and was gone. Tracy was yelling. Lynn got to Jamie. The blood was thick around his head.
"Jamie! Jamie!"
She got to her knees, turned him over gently. He had a huge gusher on his forehead, red blood pouring down one side of his face. He smiled weakly.
"Hi, Mom."
"Jamie, where are you hit?"
"Not where, Jamie. I fell from the tree."
She had the edge of her skirt in her hand, was cautiously wiping the wound. She saw no bullet hole, just a huge abrasion, bleeding profusely.
"Honey, you weren't shot?"
"No, Mom."
He shook his head.
"It wasn't me, anyway. He was after Dave."
"Who was?"
"Billy."
Lynn looked up at the tree overhead, branches gently swaying in the light of the headlamps. Dave was gone. Dave's first jump landed him on the sidewalk, and he began running after the fleeing Billy Cleaver, who was heading down the street, running home. Dave could move swiftly when he wanted to, loping on all fours. He ran parallel to the sidewalk, staying on the grass because the concrete hurt his knuckles.
He was growling continuously as he closed in on Billy. At the end of the block, Billy turned and saw Dave bearing down on him. He held his gun in two shaking hands and fired a shot, then another. Dave kept coming. Along the street, people were looking out their windows. All the windows glowed blue from the TV sets inside. Billy turned to run, and Dave caught him and slammed his head into a traffic signpost. It rang with the impact. Billy tried to turn, but he was terrified. Dave held him firmly and smashed his head into the concrete. He would have killed him for sure, but the sound of approaching sirens made him pause and look up. In that moment, Billy kicked, scrambled to his feet, and ran up the driveway of the nearest house. He climbed into a car parked in the driveway. Dave chased him. Billy slammed the door and locked it just as Dave landed on the windshield. He slid over the surface of the hood, peering into the interior. Billy aimed his gun, but he was too shaken, too terrified to fire. Dave dropped down to the passenger side, tried the door, yanking again and again at the handle. Billy was gasping for breath, watching him. Then Dave dropped down again, completely out of sight. The sirens came closer. Billy realized his predicament slowly. The police were coming. He was locked in the car with a gun in his hand, his blood and fingerprints smeared all over it, powder marks and a red cut where the hammer had nipped him. He didn't know how to shoot, not really. He had just wanted to scare them, is all. The police were going to find him here, trapped in this car. Cautiously, he peered out the passenger window, trying to see Dave. Black and screaming, Dave leapt up and slammed against the window. Billy screamed and jumped back. The gun fired, hitting the dashboard, plastic splinters cutting into his arm, the car filling with smoke. He dropped the gun onto the floorboard, leaned back in the seat. He was gasping for breath. Sirens, closer. Maybe they would find him here, but it was self-defense. That would be obvious. Monkey Boy was a vicious animal. The police would take one look at him and realize that everything Billy had done was self-defense. He had to protect himself. The Monkey Kid was vicious. He looked like an ape and he acted like an ape. He was a killer. He belonged behind bars in a zoo. Flashing red lights sweeping the roof of the car. The sirens stopped. Billy heard a bullhorn. "This is the police. Come out of the car, now. Very slow, with your hands where we can see them."
"I can't," he yelled. "He's out there."
"Come out of the car, now," the voice boomed. "With your hands up."
Billy waited a while, then came out, holding his hands high, blinking in the bright spotlight of the police cars. A cop came up and shoved him onto the ground. He snapped handcuffs on him.
"It wasn't my fault," he said, his face pushed in the grass. "It was that kid Dave. He's under the car."
"There's nobody under the car, son," the cop said, lifting him to his feet. "Just you, nobody else. Now, you going to tell us what this is about?" His father came. Billy knew he was going to get a beating, but his father didn't give any indication of that. He asked to see the gun. He asked Billy where the bullets were. Billy said he was shooting at a vicious kid who was attacking him. Billy's father just nodded, his face bland, but he said he would follow the cops down to the station when they took Billy there to book him. Henry said, "I think we have to admit it just isn't working."
"What do you mean?"
Lynn said, running her fingers through Dave's hair.
"This isn't Dave's fault. You said so yourself."
"I know, but there seems to be trouble all the time, biting, fighting, now gunshots, for God's sake. He's endangering all of us."
"But it's not his fault, Henry."
"I'm worried about what will happen next."
"You could have thought of that earlier," she said,
in a sudden burst of anger.
"Like 4 years ago, when you decided to do your experiment.
because now it's a little too late to be having regrets, don't you think? He's our responsibility, and he's staying with us. But we're his family. They were shooting at Jamie. Jamie's all right. But shooting? It was some crazy kid. Sixth grader. The police have him.
Lynn, you're not listening.
She glared at him. What do you think? That you can quietly get rid of him? Like a petri dish that didn't turn out right? You can't just dump Dave in the bio trash. You're the one who's not listening. Dave is a living, thinking, sentient being, and you made him. You are the reason why he exists on this earth. You don't have the right to abandon him just because he's inconvenient or has trouble at school. She paused to catch her breath. She was very angry. Anyway, I'm not giving him up, she said, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. But not now, Henry.
Henry knew that tone. He shrugged and left.
Thank you, Dave said, bending his head so she could run her fingers through the fur on his neck. Thank you, Mum.
Alex took her son to an In-N-Out drive-in, and they had burgers and fries and strawberry shakes. It was now dark outside. She thought of calling Lynn again, but Lynn had sounded harried. She decided not to. She paid for the burgers in cash. Then they drove to a Walston's drugstore, one of those block-long places that had everything. She bought Jamie some underwear and a change of clothes. She did the same for herself. She bought a couple of toothbrushes and toothpaste. She was heading toward the checkout when she saw the guns for sale over by the cameras and watches. She went to look. Over the years, she had gone to shooting ranges with her father. She could handle a gun. She told Jamie to go look at the toy aisle, and she went to the gun rack.
Help you?
It was a wimpy guy with a mustache.
I'd like to see that Mossberg double action.
She nodded to the wall.
That's our Model 590, 12-gauge, perfect for home defense. Got a special price this week only.
She hefted it. Okay, I'll take it.
I'll need an ID and a deposit to hold it.
No, she said. I mean, I'll buy it now.
Sorry, ma'am. 10-day waiting period in California.
She handed the gun back.
I'll think it over, she said.
She returned to Jamie, bought the Spider-Man toy he was playing with, and walked out to the parking lot. A man was standing at the back of her car, bending over the license plate, writing the number down. He was an older guy in some kind of uniform. He looked like a security guard from the store. She thought, run, leave now. But that didn't make sense. She needed a car. It was time to think fast. She told Jamie to get in the car, and she walked to the back.
You know, he's a damn liar, she said.
Who's that? The guard said.
My ex-husband. He pretends like this car is his, but it isn't. He's just harassing me. I got a court order to stop him, and I got a big judgment against the security guard at Walmart.
How's that?
He said. Don't act dumb, she said. I know you got a call from him. He pretends to be an attorney. He pretends to be a bail bondsman or a court agent, and he wants you to check if my car is in the lot. He says it's some pending legal matter.
Well, yes.
He's lying, and you're now liable. Did he tell you I was an attorney?
No, he just...
Well, I am, and you're an accessory to his breaking the court order. That makes you liable to damages, invasion of privacy, and harassment.
She took a pad from her purse.
Now, your name is...
She squinted at the name tag, began to write,
"I don't want any trouble, ma'am."
"Then give me that sheet of paper you wrote my license on and back off," she said. "And when my husband calls again, you damn well tell him you never set eyes on me, or I'll see you in court. And I promise you, you'll be lucky if all you lose is your job." He nodded, gave her the paper. His hands were shaking. She got in the car and drove off. As she pulled out of the parking lot, she thought, maybe it will work. Then again, maybe not. Mostly, she was stunned by how fast this bounty hunter had located her. He no doubt had followed her own car north for a couple of hours, and then realized that she had switched cars with her assistant. He and his cohorts knew her assistant's name, and they got her car registration. So now they knew the car Alex was driving. Then Alex had used her credit card, and within minutes, the bounty hunter had known about it and fixed her position at a motel in San Juan Capistrano. Realizing that she'd need supplies, the hunter had probably called every convenience store within a 5-mile radius of the motel and gave a story to the security people, "Be on the lookout for a white Toyota, license so-and-so." And this guy found her right away. Unless she missed her bet, the bounty hunter was on his way to Capistrano right now. If he was driving, he would be there in 3 hours. But if he had access to a helicopter, he might be here already. Already? "Mom, can I watch TV when we go back to the motel?" "Sure, honey." But of course, they weren't going back to the motel. She parked around the corner from the motel. From her position, she could see the lobby and the kid inside. He was talking on the phone, looking around as he did so. She turned on her regular cell phone and dialed the motel. The kid put the other line on hold and picked up.
"Best Western."
"Yes, this is Mrs. Coulson. I checked in earlier."
"Yes, Mrs. Coulson."
It seemed to excite him. He looked around in all directions now, frantic.
"You put me in room 204.
"Yes."
"I think there's someone in my room."
"Mrs. Coulson, I can't imagine.
I want you to come here and open the door for me."
"If it's anybody, it's probably the maid.
I think it's a man."
"Oh, no, it couldn't be. Come here and open the door. Or do I have to call the police?"
"No, I'm sure. I'll be right there."
"Thank you." He switched to the other line, spoke quickly, and then left the lobby, running down toward the rooms at the back. Alex got out of her car and sprinted across the street to the lobby. She moved in quickly, stepped behind the counter, picked up the shotgun, and walked out again. It was a sawed-off 12-gauge Remington. Not her first choice, but it would do for now. She'd get shells later. She got back in the car.
"What's the gun for?"
Jamie said.
"Just in case," she said.
She drove off, turning onto Camino Real. Through her rearview mirror, she saw the kid coming back into the lobby, looking puzzled.
"I want to watch TV," Jamie said.
"Not tonight," she said. "Tonight we are going to have an adventure."
"What kind of adventure?"
"You'll see." She drove east, away from the lights, and into the darkness of the mountains. Stan Milgram was lost in endless darkness. The road ahead was a strip of light, but on each side he could see no signs of life at all. Nothing except pitch-black desert landscape stretching away into the distance. To the north he could just detect the ridge of the mountains, a faint line of black against black, but nothing else. No lights, no towns, no houses, nothing. It had been that way for an hour. Where the hell was he? From the back seat, the bird gave a piercing shriek. Stan jumped. The sound made his eardrums ache. If you ever plan to motor west, he thought, don't take a damn bird on the highway. That's the best. He'd put cloth over the cage hours ago, but the cloth didn't shut the bird up anymore. From St. Louis down through Missouri and on to Gallup, New Mexico, all the way the bird would not shut up. Stan checked into a Gallup motel, and at around midnight the bird began to scream, ear-splitting shrieks. There was nothing to do but check out, with all the other motel guests yelling at him, and start driving again. The bird was silent once they were driving, but he pulled off the road for a few hours during the day to sleep, and later, when he stopped at Flagstaff, Arizona, the bird began to scream again. It started before he even checked into the motel. He kept driving, Winona, Kingman, Barstow, heading for San Bernardino, San Berdu, his aunt called it, and all he could think was this trip would be over soon. Please, God, let it be over before he killed the bird. But Stan was exhausted, and after driving more than 2,000 miles, he had become strangely disoriented. Either he had missed the San Berdu turnoff, or he wasn't sure. He was lost. And the bird still shrieked. Your heart sweats, your body shakes, another kiss is what it takes. He pulled the car over. He opened the door to the back seat. He took the cloth off. Gerard, he said, why are you doing this? You can't sleep, you can't eat. Gerard, stop it! Why?
I'm afraid.
Why?
It's too far from home. The bird blinked, looked at the darkness outside. What fresh hell is this?
This is the desert.
It's freezing.
The desert is cold at night.
Why are we here?
I'm taking you to your new home. Stan stared at the bird. If I leave your cloth off, will you be quiet?
Yes. No talking at all? Yes.
You promise?
Yes.
Okay. I need it quiet so I can find out where we are. I don't know why I love you like I do. After all the changes,
try and help me, Gerard. Please?
Stan went around and got in the driver's seat. He pulled out onto the road and started driving. The bird was quiet. The miles rolled by. Then he saw a sign for a town called Erp, 3 miles ahead.
Mellow greetings, Yuki Dookie, Gerard said.
Stan sighed. He drove forward into the night. You remind me of a man, Gerard said.
You promised, Stan said.
No, you are supposed to say, what man? Gerard, shut up. You remind me of a man, Gerard said.
What man?
The man with the power.
What power?
The power of hoodoo.
Hoodoo? Stan said.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of a man.
What man?
Stan said, and then he caught himself. Gerard, shut up, or I will put you outside right now.
Ooh, aren't you the twisted bunny?
Stan glanced at his watch. 1 more hour, he thought. 1 more hour, and that bird was out. Ellis sat down across from his brother, Aaron, in Aaron's office at the law firm. The office window looked south over the city, down toward the Empire State Building. It was a hazy day, but the view was still spectacular, powerful.
Okay, Ellis said. I talked to that guy in California, Josh Winkler.
Uh-huh.
He says he never gave anything to Mom.
Uh-huh.
Says what he sent was water.
Well, that's what you would expect him to say.
Aaron, Ellis said, they gave her water. Winkler said that he was not going to transport anything across state lines. His mother wanted it done, so he sent water to test the placebo effect.
And you believe him? Aaron said, shaking his head.
I think he has documentation.
Of course he does, Aaron said.
sign-outs, lab reports, and other documentation maintained by his company. Falsified, Aaron said. That documentation is required by the FDA. Falsifying it is a federal offense.
So is giving gene therapy to friends.
Aaron pulled out a sheaf of papers. Do you know the history of gene therapy? It's a horror story, Ellie. Starting back in the late 1980s, the biotech guys went off half-cocked and killed people right and left. At least 600 people we know about have been killed, and plenty more we don't know about. You know why we don't know?
No. Why?
Because they claimed, get this, that the deaths couldn't be reported because they were proprietary information. Killing their patients was a trade secret.
Did they really say that?
Could I make this shit up? And then they bill Medicare for the cost of the experiment that killed the patient. They kill, we pay. And if the universities get caught, they claim they don't have to give informed consent to subjects because they are non-profit institutions. Duke, Penn, University of Minnesota, big places have been caught. Academics think they're above the law. 600 deaths.
Ellis said, I don't see what this has to do.
You know how gene therapy kills people? All sorts of ways. They don't know what's going to happen. They insert genes into people, and it turns on cancer genes, and the people die of cancer. Or they have huge allergic reactions and die. These goofballs don't know what the hell they are doing. They're reckless, and they don't follow the rules. And we, he said, are gonna smack their asses down.
Ellis squirmed in his chair. But what if Winkler's telling the truth? What if we are wrong?
We didn't break the rules, Aaron said. They did. Now Mom's got Alzheimer's, and they're in deep, deep shit.